Hello and welcome again to another edition of Real Time China from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. Well, Keith Powell, I'm back with you for another 30 minutes of news and views from CRI in Beijing. Coming up on today's program, following the news, marine environment still not satisfactory. Fishing ban to help protect fishing resource on the Yangtze River, and foreign TV expands in the Chinese market. We have this and much more, so don't touch that dial. First, however, we cut to the CRI newsroom for the latest news about China.
CRI News, I'm Tu Yun. Chinese Vice Premier Li Lanqing and Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir bin Mohamad appreciate the rapid development of bilateral ties and of Sino-ASEAN relations. Meeting with Mahathir in Kuala Lumpur, Li Lanqing says, in recent years, the friendship between the two countries has developed at an unprecedented pace, and China will continue to push forward this friendship. Li Lanqing praises Mahathir for the active role he has played in promoting the development of Sino-ASEAN relations. He says China advocates the purpose of establishing the China-ASEAN Free Trade Zone is to realize a win-win situation that will ensure the common development of China and ASEAN. Only based on coexistence and a win-win situation can international economic relations maintain a healthy development. Mahathir reiterates China's development provides opportunities for Malaysia. He stresses his country supports China for its all-round development with ASEAN. Chancellor of the Chinese Embassy in Israel, Fan Jianmin, has confirmed one of the Chinese workers injured in the Tel Aviv bomb attack a week ago died Saturday night. 50-year-old Zhang Minmin was seriously injured in the head during the suicide bomb attack and was immediately sent to hospital in Tel Aviv. She was in a coma and managed to survive another week. It is said the Israeli Foreign and Interior Ministries and Police Bureau will hold the funeral for the three deceased Chinese workers before their bodies are sent home. Last Sunday's two suicide bombings in Tel Aviv have killed a total of 23 people. China's central bank, the People's Bank of China, has issued a regulation to combat money laundering. Under the regulation, financial institutions and their employees will be obligated to participate in the fight against money laundering, maintain the confidentiality of anti-money laundering information, and cooperate with law enforcement officials in anti-money laundering efforts. Customers opening a savings account or settling accounts will be required to present proper identification. Employees will check the identification documents and register the names and other information. It also stipulates financial institutions failing to comply with their new responsibilities will be subject to prosecution. China has issued a general aviation flying control regulation. This is the first time for China to issue this kind of regulation. It's believed the regulation will have a positive impact on the development of China's aviation industry and promote air safety. In recent years, the scope of the country's aviation activities has extended to many fields of economic construction. Five convicted drug traffickers have been sentenced to death by a local court in East China's Zhejiang province. The court also ruled that the five be deprived of their political rights for life and all their private property confiscated. The court investigation shows the five, headed by Wang Daohua, formed a drug trafficking ring, which over the past 2 years had purchased more than 76 kilograms of heroin from Yunnan province in southwest China and smuggled most of it into Shanghai. China has taken measures to improve medical services for AIDS patients. They include allocating special funds, reducing treatment fees, training doctors and nurses, and seeking international cooperation. Director of the Disease Control Department of the Health Ministry, Qi Xiaoqiu, says consolidating treatment has become one of the most important tasks in AIDS prevention. Starting this year, the central government will allocate 22 million yuan or 1.7 million US dollars in special funds to treat AIDS patients in poor regions. It is estimated there are about 100,000 AIDS patients, most of whom live in rural areas. The ministry will also establish 100 county-level demonstration zones for HIV/AIDS prevention and training medical personnel for large-scale treatment. In addition, it is expected the average cost of drugs for treating HIV/AIDS will decrease by 10% after they are produced in China. This is CRI News. China's automobile output hit a total of 3.25 million units last year, a 38% increase on 2001. China now ranks fifth in the world in terms of auto production. Over 1 million sedan cars were manufactured in 2002, a 55% increase on the previous year. Over the past few years, China's auto industry has become the national economy's pioneer force, contributing greatly to GDP as well as the increase in consumption. Japan's Nippon Life Insurance Company is planning to sell life insurance in China through a joint venture with China's SVA Information Industry Company. A final decision is expected later this month from the companies. The venture is expected to be valued at nearly $42 million. If successful, Nippon Life would become the first Japanese life insurance company to engage in such a venture. Major Japanese telecoms companies will expand their operations in China ahead of the country's move to open up its telecom industry by the end of 2004. The Nihon Keizai Shimbun reports KDDI, Japan's number two telecom after NTT, will set up a subsidiary in the southern city of Guangzhou this month to help Japanese companies build telecommunication systems in China in conjunction with local phone carriers. KDDI will fund it with $420 million. Meanwhile, NTT Communications Corporation, a subsidiary of Japan's fixed-line giant NTT, is looking to boost employment at its joint ventures in Beijing, Hong Kong, and Shanghai. The company is also reportedly setting up an operation in the city of Suzhou in East China later in January to help Japanese businesses cooperate with local companies to build phone systems. The Bank of East Asia has opened its first Supreme Gold Center in Hong Kong to offer enhanced personal banking service to its customers in Hong Kong and the mainland. Each Supreme Gold member will be assigned a dedicated relationship manager, available to assist with all banking needs and provide information on financial planning. A variety of investment services and products, including stock trading, mutual funds, bonds, and linked deposits, will be available to meet members' needs. The Shanghai Stock Exchange has begun marketing corporate bonds issued by the Three Gorges Project, valued at 5 billion yuan, more than $600 million. This is the fifth round of bond issuance by the China Yangtze Three Gorges Project Company. The company has raised nearly $2 billion, or 15% of the funding now in place for the construction of the project. Bonds have proven to be the third most important funding channel for the project, following government funds and bank loans. The Three Gorges Project has been progressing steadily, with the first group of generating units expected to produce electricity beginning this August. Beijing saw a high of 8 degrees Celsius, the second highest recorded temperature for January since 1961. But don't get your hopes up just yet. The meteorologists say the warm weather will not last long. A strong wave of cold air is expected to bring strong winds to most areas of North China this week, which will push the temperature back down by about 6 to 10 degrees Celsius. But then we'll see the temperature back on their way up before too long. Finally, take a look at the weather of the capital area. Beijing is clear in the day. The high temperature is 4 degrees Celsius. That's CRI News. I'm Tu Yun. Please stay tuned for more on CRI.
Welcome back. You're listening to Real Time China, coming to you from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. China's marine ecosystem is generally in a good state, but serious offshore pollution remains a problem for the country. This was announced Friday in a communique. Our own Wang Jing has the story.
The State Oceanography Bureau, an authoritative organ that conducts surveys and supervises sea areas, has published two communiques concerning the marine environment and ocean disasters in 2002. Spokesman Wang Fei from the Bureau says the marine environment has been generally good over the past year.
Sea areas which don't meet adequate hygiene standards have increased by 1,000 square kilometers, but seriously polluted marine areas have decreased by 7,000 square kilometers.
He adds that China has also sped up creation of oceanic nature reserves. By the end of last year, 17 nature reserves had been set up, giving specific protection to rare sea animals and oceanic ecosystems. However, the communiques also point out that serious pollution in offshore areas hasn't changed, especially around populated cities with heavy industry and major river delta seaports. Wang Fei says serious pollution greatly threatens marine life.
Offshore oceanic areas are in a serious condition. Damaged ecosystems, such as the wetlands and mangrove swamps, haven't improved. Red tides are still frequently seen.
Last year alone, there were 70 red tides, leading to losses in the oceanic breeding industry of millions of U.S. dollars. The communiques say China has set up a comprehensive oceanic supervision system, including marine satellites, airplanes, and ships. The State Oceanography Bureau is calling on oceanic departments at all levels to strengthen their forecasting work to effectively preempt disasters and keep losses to a bare minimum. Wang Jing, CRI News.
The Chinese government has ordered a fishing ban along the whole Yangtze River and some of its major tributaries. Officials from the Ministry of Agriculture say this is important for the protection of dwelling fish stocks. Liao Wei has the story.
The Yangtze River is one of China's most important fisheries, producing more than 60% of the country's total freshwater fish. However, overfishing, water pollution, water conservancy projects, and environmental degradation have had a severe impact on the sustainability of these resources. Qi Jingfa is Vice Minister of Agriculture.
The shrinking fish stocks in the Yangtze is very serious, and in some sections they have almost disappeared. The sustainable development of fish resources has already been seriously affected.
Qi Jingfa explains the annual fishing output in the river has decreased to less than one-fourth of the peak time, with some species facing extinction. He says protecting aquatic resources and ecosystems is an urgent task for China. The imposition of a fishing ban is one important measure in this regard. Last year, fishing was prohibited in some sections of the river during the breeding season. This proved successful, so this year the fishing ban will be extended to the whole river. A three-month ban will start from February in the upper reaches and from April in the lower reaches. Two species are not covered by the ban, and research institutions may catch a very limited number of fish. As for the impact on the fishermen, fisheries expert Guo Wei says,
the fishing ban will affect about 50,000 people who live on fishing. During the ban, their incomes will decrease, but after the ban, they will catch more fish to make up for the losses. In addition, they will also get some allowances from the government and tax reductions.
But Guo Wei warns that bans alone will not suffice. The fish stocks may continue to shrink because dams prevent fish migrating to their spawning grounds, and water pollution and destruction of fish habitat remain serious. Many different sectors must coordinate their efforts and invest large sums of money if the Yangtze River is once again to teem with fish. Liu Wei, CRI News.
Up to 30 overseas satellite-based broadcasters, including Bloomberg and the BBC, have secured approval for limited program delivery on the mainland. Two of them already made their appearance in southern China. It paves the way for foreign TV services to enter the world's largest media market. And of course, the move is just a starting point for further penetration. Lin Lin reports.
Among the first batch of arrivals are Hong Kong-based Phoenix TV and Star TV. Phoenix is set to broadcast a 24-hour Chinese language news service, Info News, along with Star TV, in all hotels graded 3 stars or higher and in selected foreign compounds in South China's Guangdong province. As the first foreign language TV firm to broadcast entertainment on the mainland, Star TV considers its expansion vital for an expanding media empire. Star TV's China Executive Vice President Huang Shi Liu described the move as a new growth boost.
I think more and more signs of people are allowed to do that, both in television and in film. So we understand there's a great need for entertainment, for kind of information, and we believe there's a great room to grow. As the economy grows, so are the expectations for content as well as for leisure.
With the marching in of overseas media, a battle between foreign media and their domestic counterparts is expected to be just around the corner. As journalism professor Li Xiguang from Tsinghua University points out, huge potential is the primary attraction.
The Chinese media industry is really a very profitable and monopolized industry. But we must realize that China's media industry and Chinese media market is one of the most open markets in the world.
But having given its positive side, the professor warns the current status of separation between producers and broadcasters in the Chinese media may put it in a less competitive position.
If you look at CEA, if you look at Phoenix, we know that most of the popular programs are not have problem with this kind of 直播分离, separation between producer and broadcaster. And in Chinese way, this current policy as 直播分离, which sounds like a reforming policy, but actually it's created too much commercialization problem.
He therefore encourages reform on industry structures in coping with growing challenges. Lin Lin, CRI News.
Thank you very much, Lin Lin. If you've just tuned in, this is Real Time China coming to you from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. Your comments and questions, of course, are always greatly appreciated. Address them to usbox@cri.com.cn. Again, that's usbox@cri.com.cn. We now go to our sports desk with our own Chu Xin.
Six-year-old Yang Yang, who claimed the titles of the women's 500 meters and 1,000 meters at the Salt Lake City Olympic Games last year, clocked 1 minute 9.162 seconds to lead the host to a clean sweep of the medals in a 7-lap competition of the short track speed skating women's pursuit. Yang is very satisfied with her performance. She says she performed very well. She was able to beat her own previous times to win. She was 2 seconds faster than in training. She haven't had regular training since the Olympics, so she haven't been in good shape recently. She didn't think about opponents before the race. Her coach didn't require her to win the title either. So she didn't feel much pressure on her. She just did the best she could and outperformed herself. In a men's pursuit event, 18-year-old Sui Bao Ku clocked 1 minute and 6.112 seconds for his first national victory, upsetting a strong squad, including Olympic silver medalist Li Jiajun. Sui admits that it's a surprise to him, and he is very happy with the win. Li Jiajun, the men's 1,500 meters runner-up at the Salt Lake City Olympic Games, finished a disappointing fourth. The short track speed skating competitions of the Games are running from Sunday to Wednesday with a total of 14 gold medals on offer. Qu Xin, CRI News.
Beijing's GDP increased by more than 10% in 2002 compared with the previous year. Large scale of non-state investment, the development of territory and high-tech industries make great contributions to the strong growth. Liao Wei is back and has a story.
Last year, Beijing's total GDP exceeded 300 billion yuan, or $37 billion. Head of the Local Statistics Bureau Cui Shuqiang explains there are three main factors contributing to the capital's impressive growth rate.
Beijing's economic growth is mainly due to investment, consumption and exports, and each plays a relatively equal role in the city's GDP increase. But one thing that should be pointed out is that non-state investment got the lion's share of total fixed asset investment in Beijing.
He also says the tertiary industry, which developed rapidly last year, made a substantial contribution to the city's GDP growth.
As China's capital, Beijing has a huge competitive advantage in the service sector. Last year, the financial, insurance, cultural and tourism industries all developed rapidly. This not only propels the city's economy forward, but also brings Beijing in line with other international cities.
High-tech industries also grew at a rapid rate. Enterprises in Zhongguancun, also known as Beijing's Silicon Valley, made up over 17% of the municipality's total GDP in 2002. Furthermore, the average cash income of urban residents reached 12,000 yuan, or $1,500 last year. The average income of rural residents remains at about half that level. Liu Wei, CRI News.
If you want more information about any of the stories aired here on Real Time China, check out our website, www.cri.com.cn. Again, that's www.cri.com.cn. China's GDP enjoyed a stellar growth rate at around 8% last year, despite the bearish background of the worldwide recession. Of the three factors that contributed to the economy, which plays the most important role in China's GDP growth? And can the economic momentum be maintained? Well, CRI's Zhao Yang talked with economist He Fan about the subject.
Among the three factors that contribute to the country's economy, investment, domestic demand, and net exports, which factor plays the most important role in China's GDP growth?
Last year, we have a growth rate of around 8%. The first factor is investment, and investment may contribute to about 4% of China's economic growth rate. The second factor is domestic demand. Last year, we see the domestic demand also increase very rapidly, and we are lucky to see the automobile and also real estate sales quite well, so this means more room for the structural adjustment for Chinese economies, and we find some new engine for China's economic growth. The last is net export. Quite contrary to many economists' expectation, last year China's export is still grows very rapidly.
And do you think the investment will maintain the current growth speed at a relatively long term? And how about the domestic demand?
I would like to say FDI in the near future will continue to come into China because the improvement of China's investment climate and also China's economic performance is still so well. And we'll see that in the near future, proactive fiscal policy will still in place. And encouraging phenomenon is that in recent years, many private companies in China now increase their investment. I think this has become a long-term phenomenon.
And China's consumer price index has been declining for several months. And some people say this could create deflation and in turn threaten the country's thriving economy. Do you think there is a very possibility of deflation taking hold in China?
Well, deflation is not equal to decrease of price level. Deflation also accompanied by economic recession and the shrink of money supply. But we have not seen such a sign in the Chinese economy. The Chinese economy still grows very fast, and also the money supply still grows in a steady way.
That was our reporter Zhao Yang talking to Chinese economist He Fan. Well, you know what? We've actually come to the end of this edition of Real Time China from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. Now, if you want to get in touch with us, please send us an email. Our email address is usbox@cri.com.cn. Again, that's usbox@cri.com.cn. You can also get in touch with us the old-fashioned way by snail mail. Our postal address is China Radio International, English Service, care of Real Time China, Beijing, China 100040. Again, China Radio International, English Service, care of Real Time China 100040. If you want more information about any of the stories that you've heard here on Real Time China, log on to our website at www.cri.com.cn. Again, that's www.cri.com.cn. So on behalf of the entire team that helped put this show together, I'm Keith Powell wishing you well. Hope that you join me again tomorrow for more news and features from China. Until then, so long and take care.